Welcome back to Passionate Internet Voices Talk Radio Around the World, bringing you challenging, stretching, controversial, educational, entertaining programs similar to national public radio and television broadcasts. Call-ins welcomed, 319-256-0500, access code 550-703, pound key. Tonight's program with Dr. Resnick is brought to you by Swimming Kangaroo Press. Dive into some good books. Sondran Quinn, Love's Challenge and Love Under Suspicion. The Dreamer's Way, a science fiction novel by Marie Atherton, and The Dead Detective, a mystery novel by Lorraine Robinson. Freeze Foundation is now accepting applications for 2006-2007. All artists are welcome to apply. The foundation was established to assist the artist who has talent but lacks the resources to market his or her work. Possible materials the foundation can provide: editing, demo CDs, portfolios, headshots, connect with industry pros and leaders. Visit http://www.freezefoundation.org. That's F-R-E-Z-E Foundation. Today, June 26th. 2006, Ann Arbor, Michigan. Dr. Oleg Resnick with the topic Asian flu. Good evening.
Good evening, Lillian. How are you?
I am doing just fine. How are you doing?
Okay. So I prepared some material.
Great.
And that I'd like to share with you and the others. And if it's okay with you, I kind of have a number of points, pieces of information also to present, and every once in a while I'll stop to give you a chance. And also, if you feel like something is, I'm not expressing myself clearly, please stop me with a question, because some of this material, as it is familiar to me, sometimes what one presents is not totally clear to someone who doesn't have a biomedical background.
Okay.
Avian flu, there is so there's a lot of talk about it, and there is some fear about it. So I thought it would be a good topic to discuss, because I think we have already too much fear in the world. And so to address this apparent danger and to deal with the fear, I thought it would be a good idea. So I wanted to start just with the biology, just the really basics of the influenza virus, and what's different about it, why it causes epidemics, pandemics, as opposed to other viruses that don't do that, because there are so many different kinds of viruses, and they cause all kinds of cold and flu symptoms, but that tends not to be too severe. And why is that? Well, what's unique about the influenza virus is it has 8 pieces of DNA, unlike most viruses that have usually 1 or 2. And there is a mechanism within the virus that when it replicates, it reshuffles its own DNA. It kind of breaks itself up. Each of these 8 fragments is broken into smaller pieces, and they are shuffled like a deck of cards, you could say. And by itself, this is not necessarily a big deal, but where it becomes important is when a person or an animal is infected by 2 different viruses. So what happens, and the influenza viruses generally are species specific, meaning there are human influenza viruses, bird or avian influenza viruses, swine or pig influenza viruses, horses get it as well. And generally it does not cross the what's called the species barrier, but from time to time it does. And that happens usually in the farms, in the places where people and animals are close together. And when you have 2 viruses together, they can exchange pieces from one to the other. So say a bird who has a avian flu, which is a flu that affects the birds but does not generally cause any kind of problems in the people, let's say a bird can get infected with the human virus, or a human can get infected with the human virus and avian virus, when they reshuffle their DNA, I'm sorry, it's RNA, it's not DNA, when they reshuffle their RNA, they will exchange pieces of that RNA, and that leads to a virus that is significantly different from the previous one. Now, why is that important? When the virus, let's say the virus we had from last year, it changes a little bit from year to year. This is called genetic drift, when it changes slightly due to mutations, random mutations. And so the if we got a flu last year, it's not going to be very effective for the next year because there is some change in the virus already present. Now, when you change a whole fragment of the RNA, that's called genetic shift as opposed to genetic drift. And then the virus is really drastically different in some respects, and the body is completely unprepared to handle it. And that's what happened with the in the Spanish flu pandemic in 1918, where millions and millions, I believe the estimate was 20 to 50 million of people died from this pandemic, or it is said that they did. And whenever there is a significant change, then it can happen. It may happen to be a change that will be deadly. So that's what makes the virus unique, this reshuffling process, the reshuffling of the RNA. So far, am I explaining myself well, Lillian?
Okay, what's RNA?
Oh, ribonucleic acid. It's the viral genetic code. Unlike the human, which is DNA,
right,
deoxyribonucleic, the viruses, they have a simplified version, slightly different type of a genetic material called RNA, and they're interesting creatures, the viruses. They are not only they have a different type of genetic material, it's made of similar units, but it's slightly different.
Okay.
And they also don't have much of their own machinery, unlike the usual cells that can replicate and regenerate lots of things to take care of themselves. The viruses depend on the host. So the virus invades the human cell and uses the human cell's own machinery to replicate itself and to assemble itself. Very interesting.
Okay, so that's how they can start becoming resistant then to the drugs that are administered?
Oh, resistance happens to be acquired through a similar mechanism as with bacteria, with anything. You put any kind of a pressure against survival. So there are three drugs now, and I'll just mention them and then come
okay.
back to them. Well, there is amantadine, rimantadine, and Tamiflu.
Okay.
And the first two essentially are no longer effective, or very minimally effective, and are believed that they're not going to be effective at all if there was an avian flu. And the third one, Tamiflu, some people think it might be effective. The chances, it's controversial. People who have money are buying lots of Tamiflu now, the military, the rich countries are buying supplies of Tamiflu. The chances are that it will not work. The virus is going to be different enough that it will not be affected by this medication.
Okay, I do have one question. Why? What's the big difference? Now, for one of the diseases, what was it, smallpox, I forget, where they put something in an animal and then they took it out from the animal and they infected the person, but it was also part of the vaccine. They can't do the same thing with the avian flu, like infect somebody with the avian flu and then take that same whatever out of the body and put it into a human and use that as part of a vaccine. That wouldn't work?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. I suppose it could. There are several problems with this. Why this couldn't work now is because when you do that, one is that you invariably will make some people sick and you will kill some people. So this is not okay nowadays. In the past, maybe it was as long as the majority of people are not killed. Or if you were to, so you wouldn't do it intentionally to infect. What they did with the vaccinia was the name of the disease that cows had, and it was similar to chickenpox, and it was discovered that if you inject, actually it was the people who were injected with the pus from the cow's lesions, if they would get sick from this milder disease, they would then become immune to smallpox, to a more severe disease. And this was the basis of immunization, and this is now, of course, why we are getting shots for flu and everything else. Now, why is this not going to work for avian flu? Now, the avian flu, even if it was to happen, is going to be different from the usual flu that we have. So how do they prepare the flu vaccine now? The regular flu vaccine has three viruses that are killed, the one that you get a shot. There is another vaccine that's given intranasally that's called live attenuated. It's actually alive, but is made, the virus is partly damaged. But the one that is given, you have two different type A viruses and one type B viruses. There are different types. But these are taken from other times and places, isolated viruses. And it is hoped that the virus that we will have next year will be similar to one of the two or three that are in the vaccine, and so we will be immune to it. Now, the avian flu, by definition, cannot be similar. The flu that produces a pandemic has to be different enough, otherwise it could not produce a pandemic. There are certain characteristics that it must have. One is it must be transmissible, must be easily transmitted. Two, it must be deadly, but not too deadly, because if it kills people on the spot, then you don't have enough people circulating around to get everybody else sick. So the new virus has to have these characteristics to be deadly, not too deadly, easily transmissible, and be completely or very different from the previous one. So vaccine is not going to work either. This is well understood and known. It's not something that's a secret in the medical or scientific community. What is hoped for is that once this flu is generated, they will isolate it and then create a vaccine for it. Now, it first has to be first it has to appear in the world. Once it appears, then it's true that it can be created. It now takes 6 to 9 months with the current technology to produce a vaccine. 6 to 9 months. It's grown in the chicken, in the chicken eggs. It's an older technology. There is a newer technology as part of research, but it is not available for mass production. So by the time the truly effective vaccine is going to be available, the pandemic will be over. Essentially. So neither the medication nor the vaccine is going to work if this was to happen. Any questions so far, Lily?
Yeah, with the people who are getting it, the disease, why do some of them die from it? And they've also said there have been several others who were exposed to it, and yet they didn't die. And in fact, if they were sick, they were only sick, you know, for a couple hours or maybe a day, and then they managed to shake it off. Was that because their immunity system was in better shape than others?
Okay, yeah, that's a good question. And I want to answer it in kind of two parts. First, I want to cite the actual numbers. I think this is really important so you can see the magnitude of the problem. And the magnitude right now is essentially non-existent, even though there's a lot of talk about it. So what are the actual facts and the numbers? The first documented case of avian flu infecting people was in 1997 in Hong Kong. There were 18 people infected, and 6 of them died. So 97, 18 infected people, 6 died. Since 2003 until now, so almost 3 years, what do we have? We have, so far, 228 people infected, and 130 of those people died. In addition, there is no confirmed person-to-person transmission. In other words, almost all, if not all of the people who got it directly from the bird. They couldn't transmit it to another person. There were some people who it couldn't be exactly accounted for, they couldn't say for sure, but for the vast majority of these infected people, it was that. To put this into perspective, 228 people infected and 130 died since 2003. If you were to guess, what do you think, what would be the number of people you think that die in the U.S. of a regular flu, not avian flu, but the usual flu that we get infected in every year? What do you think, Lillian? Can you take a guess? Would you venture a guess?
I would think mostly they're older people and children.
Yeah, and what would be the number? Like, can you just, would you be willing to guess on that?
I don't know, about a third?
No, but the actual number, can
oh,
you say?
Oh, no, I wouldn't even hazard a guess.
Okay, so it's 36,000. In the U.S. alone, just in the U.S., about 36,000 people die every year of the flu. So, and it's true what you said, that it's mainly old people. So that's what we have with regular flu. With avian flu, 130 dead since 2003. Of course, nobody wants to be dead, but this is worldwide. When we talk about worldwide, 130 is a very, very small number. And it's not only in my personal opinion, but World Health Organization, for that reason, places no restriction. As of now, there is no restriction from WHO on travel to countries where avian flu happened, like Hong Kong, Vietnam, Cambodia, where you have the most cases. There is no restriction because it's still, even though with these numbers, it's a very small problem compared to all the ills of the world.
So do you get the flu by eating the bird, coming in contact with the bird, handling them?
Just by hanging out with the bird, you're coming in contact. Yeah, if you're mainly people who were physically in the farm, very close physically to with the birds, you have to be really right there. It's usually
stroking it, I would think.
Yeah. I mean, the bird has to sneeze on you, essentially.
That explains a lot. Okay.
Now, you also asked what makes some people die and what makes others not die. And this is a question where the answer depends on your philosophical approach to health and illness. Now, what is the usual answer is that it is unknown or it's due to a random chance that it's due to a random chance that some people happen to have a stronger immunity than others. While it is true that older people are likely to die with a regular flu, for instance, at the same time you can have two older people who are both who both appear the same, but yet one will die and the other one will survive. And the usual scientific answer that you will get from most people is that the person who survives happened to have the kind of genetic makeup that makes them more resistant than others. So that's one type of answer.
They use that for the bubonic plague. Whether or families where some were just died and then others managed to get a bad case of it, but nothing deadly, and they managed to survive.
Yeah, and with flu, like with any illness, but especially like with viral illnesses, you get a spectrum from people who get infected and developing immunity without ever becoming sick, to people who become sick and then develop immunity, to people who become sick and not make it and who die. So there's always this spectrum, and it is likely to happen if there was avian flu. But I had a conference in the hospital where the expert on just that came to talk, and essentially she said that the microbiologists who work on that don't think that it's going to happen, that the virus does not have the characteristics, but still we should be prepared and so on. But it's true that we should be prepared. But unfortunately, the messages that are given sometimes make people frightened because of the belief that if you frighten people enough, they're going to do what you tell them to do. And then we create suffering for ourselves. How do we do it? We do it before the event actually happens, and we do it during the event. Now, before the event happens, how does that happen? It happens because people got so panicked that they went ahead and they killed millions of chickens, which is the case in those poor countries, as a preventive measure. Not only there, in Western Europe they killed them too, and I'm not sure about the U.S., but it may have happened here too. So they killed millions of chickens. Now, there is an economic impact of that. Those countries are already not the wealthiest in the world, and now they're suffering more. What does that mean when people suffer economically? It always means that there are some people who are dying, and these are the people who cannot voice themselves on the media, say, well, we are dying because you guys have brought the economic problem to us. That's part of the story of what happens, what the fear brings before the thing. Now, how does it work during the event, if the event was to happen? It was in the books that describe the pandemic, the events that took place. What seems to happen, actually, many people who died are really, you could say, they died of fear, not really of the virus. Why do I say that? If you had the same person at the time where there is no panic, no fear, you have them, they would be sick, they would get some supportive care at home. Let's say they wouldn't go to the hospital, but they would stay at home, they would get their supportive treatment, and they would survive. Now, why do they die during the epidemic or during any kind of natural disaster? Because there is fear and panic, and that has several impacts. First, the person himself is terrified, and emotional distress is known to suppress our own immune system, to suppress our own ability to fight. So that's one impact. One side of it is the direct emotional response that has everything to do with everything else. The other part of it is that people, because they're so scared, they were not, during the last pandemic, they weren't coming to work. They weren't doing it. They were, so you had stoppage of everything, the running water, the basic hygienic measures were lost because people were terrified. They were sitting at home worrying themselves, and that, and not the virus itself, but our response to the virus is what ended up in causing lots of deaths. I couldn't say if it's more than the actual virus or not, or the actual virus matters, but the fear certainly is huge. And if an event like that was to happen, the first thing, the first recommendation, if I had to make one, would be not to fear.
Stay calm. I agree.
Yes?
Yes.
Yes, I think so. So what else was I going to mention? I was going to mention also that we've had these kind of things before where it seemed like dangers were coming. There was a swine flu, I think it was 1950s, where there was a similar kind of a scare. There was very recently SARS, severe acute respiratory syndrome, a few years ago, 2000 or something. That we were thinking that there were several cases of people dying, and we were thinking, oh, next year it's going to be more, and never materialized. There was a mad cow disease scare.
Yes.
And again, that didn't amount to anything. There was a Y2K. I remember I was doing residency at Stony Brook Hospital, and we were all getting ready to this huge disaster. And that, of course, didn't happen. There was soon after, unfortunately, the terrorist attack. And following that, there was a fear of mass terrorist anthrax because there were some cases of anthrax, if you remember.
Yes.
Some crazy people sending it in the envelopes, but that didn't happen either. So there are many, every so often, quite often, we hear these different threats, and I think it's important to keep them in perspective, and being aware, yes, but being afraid, no, that does not help. I think that does harm.
I agree with you. And I think there's always something that you're going to be afraid of if you make up your mind to be afraid.
Yeah. And also it depends on a person's suggestibility, because if you look at the TV, it is predominantly based on a suggestion to get you to do something. And how do you get people to do something is by either offering them pleasure or pain. Pain is fear in this case. So they get you to become frightened. Oh, look, this could happen to you. You should buy life insurance and so on. So is this. There are some probably well-meaning people who want you to do something, and they say, well, there's this terrible threat coming in. You better build up stores in your house and go to the supermarket, prepare yourself a disaster kit, store food for a month and so on. And people start worrying, and of course they do things, but I think it also helps to be aware of that's how large part of the mass media works, through suggestion, because this is the way to get you to do things.
Absolutely. I agree. In fact, Rod Sterling had on Twilight Zone had a story in which some aliens came to Earth and they planted the idea that one of the people in the neighborhood was not altogether 100% American, and they watched the whole neighborhood kind of disintegrate to the point where they were out killing each other. And one alien turns to another and says, "See how easy it is to disrupt these people and for us to take over? All we have to do is introduce fear, and they do the rest for us."
Yeah, that's what we do. So, but there is a way out. It's through awareness of one's own inner states, and the fear, of course, being the main one. So the more we are aware that when we are afraid, it's probably false, then the more free we could become.
Yes, the more prepared, the more knowledge we have, the better off we are.
Yes, yeah, awareness is very important. Well, that's the end of our program, unless you have something else you want to.
No, I think you did very well. I'm delighted that you spoke about it, because I'm sure there are other people who, like me, think, well, I don't have the money or the resources to run out to buy the vaccine. I don't have the money nor the resources to run out and get the special masks and everything else you need in order to not breathe in the poisonous air. And if you think about it, it's only the people who have the political or social political means to obtain these things that the normal average citizen does not. And they're the ones who have to battle whatever is going on. So
yeah.
That there are only two ways you can look at it. Well, okay, when I get it, I'll handle it. Or, you know, that's life. And still go on with your life and handle it. And that's pretty much the attitude I've established. If it's going to happen, it's going to happen. And that's it. You know, why get upset about it? Because I don't have the means or the wherewithal to get that stuff anyway.
Yes. And chances are you won't need it. You know, the people with the power and with the money, they're thinking that if you have the medication or this or that, you're going to be safe, but it's not the case.
Does that medication go stale the way the flu virus vaccination does?
Does the medication go what? Oh, go
stale.
It just is not, it loses effectiveness as the time goes, because the virus, it doesn't work for every kind of virus. And as the first two, amantadine and remantadine, that have been used for a long time now, now they became ineffective even for the regular virus. With each year, they have less and less effectiveness. And the Tamiflu is still effective against the regular one. But the avian one, if it mutates enough to become a pandemic type of virus, it is unlikely to be effective. So if you don't have the resources to buy Tamiflu, don't worry about it. I didn't buy it for myself nor for my kids, and God forbid we have the avian flu, I hope I will not be afraid and go out and do my things and come back to work and so on, and take it as it comes, and that's what I recommend to
that's
everyone.
What I think. Thank you very much, one and all, for listening to Dr. Oleg Resnick and his topic on avian flu. This part of the program was brought to you by WECAI Organization, which is a world e-commerce network group for business and professional people, and also Marge Tarrant, voted Knit Queen 2003. You can find her website at http://www.funandcozyknits.com. Drop her a line at funandcozyknits@comcast.net. Knitting just isn't for winter anymore. Try her out. She's open Monday through Friday and half days on Saturday to 1. Give her a call and tell her Lillian sent you. 866-353-8159. If you want to hear Dr. Resnick's discussion about avian flu, please go to http://passionateinternetvoices.com and hear all the different type of podcasts that are taken on the live programs that are run during the week. And also please visit http://internetvoicesradio.com. Take a look at the schedule for the month. Take a look at some of the services we offer for podcasting. You have any feedback or question, please let me know, 734-332-5902, or drop me email at lillian@authorsden.com. Thank you very much for listening. Our next program is scheduled for tomorrow morning at 10 o'clock in the morning. It is The Proper Care and Feeding of Your Soul with Deborah Lynn Hill, Adrian Hammonds, and Christy Boyd. Hope to see you there. Have a good evening and good night.